The Loving Them Forward nonprofit organization is putting on a drive-through caregiver Christmas event for all family, private, and professional caregivers. Hundreds of gift bags full of gifts, holiday drinks, and treats are being given out to these special individuals who give so much of themselves to help others. The two-day event is December 15th from 3:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. and on December 16th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The event is being held at a Caring Closet location in Salmon Creek, Washington. More information available at lovingthemforward.org/events.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Filibusters. Mike and John here. We are back, John, and we are back talking about the upcoming legislative session.
What are we back from, though? That's what I don't get. You
I
say
don't know.
We're back.
We're back from not being here, I guess.
I was going to say we were back from the election cycle, but in some cases we're still in there, but I won't go into that. But we did have an election cycle, and we're talking about politics, and we have a couple of guys. Who do we have on?
So we have Senator Ann Rivers from the 18th Legislative District. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Mike.
Welcome
back.
Hey,
she has a new role.
Oh.
What's your new role, Senator Rivers?
I am the newly elected Senate Republican Caucus Chair. So
awesome.
I'm responsible for running meetings and smoothing ruffled feathers and strategy, that kind of fun stuff.
Did you get a new chair out of the deal? Like literally a new chair?
I got a whole new office.
Oh, that, even better.
Now when you come to see me in Olympia, you'll visit me in the Ledge Building.
Nice. All right. And so, and we have Senator Monica Dingra from the 45th Legislative District. Welcome back, Senator.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't you have a new role as well? Or is it?
I'm continuing my role as Deputy Majority Leader. And so that's part of leadership as well as Senator Rivers' new role. So we've had some good Dingra Rivers bill in the past, but I actually am really looking forward to having her at the leadership table on the Republican side.
Awesome. So just so for our listeners, we always like to kind of map out where these districts are so folks know who's representing them. So the 18th Legislative District is most of northern and eastern Clark County, Ridgefield, the center, Battleground, and north, and a little east down to Camas and Washougal, kind of painting that picture for folks. The 45th, the Fighting 45th, is that what you guys call it? The Fighting 45th?
That's what they call it.
Let's call it that.
I think that came about because, you know, my seat was the one that flipped the Senate, so it was the
That's
fighting.
Right, that's right. And that now is Eastern King
45th.
What's that?
Now it's just the fabulous 45th.
Oh, okay. So that district, Eastern King County, Kirkland, around Redmond, down to Sammamish, right? Sounds about right?
Right, and Woodinville and Duval. It's a five
That's
city.
Right. And so my first question, though, is going to go to Senator Dingra. So this is really critical. So Kirkland is the home of Kirkland Brands, correct?
Correct.
And that means Costco Kirkland toilet paper. How are we doing on toilet paper?
You know, we're doing okay. I think in the beginning, there's a whole distribution issue. I think we're good. Back in October, there was one day when our local Costco was running low, but we
All
have
right.
it under control. No reason to stock up. The delivery system's fine.
Nice. We made a recovery. Okay. I had to get that question into me, the most important question of this interview. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Toilet paper is really important to people. So, you know, we're going to cover a lot of ground here today, and we thank you both for joining us. I want to start out with talking about the session's restrictions, if you will, because we are in the era of a pandemic and restrictions and social distancing. And so first question, you know, and both of you will get opportunities to answer these questions. Do you fear that the restrictions on this legislative session, admittedly the fact that there will be less legislation on the docket, limits our ability to provide the relief that's needed? or our ability to tackle those long-term challenges, like a transportation bill that's been talked about for several sessions. What's your take on that, Senator Rivers?
You know, I do have concerns about having a largely virtual session. We're going to do a hybrid in the Senate, which I think is a little bit better, but I have concerns about the sort of limiting democracies. But then when I think about it, I think now democracy might be as far as the personal computer or your phone, wherever you get the internet. It's going to require some adjustment on the committee chair's parts, though. There are some committee chairs who go bill, 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 bill. But now we're going to have a lot of people possibly who will want to sign in and test the committee management in the terms of numbers that they, numbers of bills that they determine they're going to hear in a day. The other piece is many people say that lobbyists are bad, they're evil, but the fact of the matter is they are highly professional individuals who know their subject content matter better than anyone else. And because we as legislators are a jack of many, many trades, but masters of very few, we rely on them to give us really good information. We're working on ways to make sure that our caucus has access to both sides. So actually, it's not even always just both sides, it's to all sides, you know, to making sure that we're voting with all of the information.
So real quick, the follow-up though, do you think this is going to, how does this affect long-term policy, right? Because I know the legislature is always not just working on stuff for this session, but kind of building towards something to the future. How do you think this affects that?
Well, you know, I've heard Representative Fye and even Senator Hobbs say, we're doing a transportation package. They look at it as a stimulus, but the areas that need the most stimulus are food service industries, service organizations are really what need stimulus, not building. We've got a lot of building going on. But having said that, you know, you look, Oregon's now had three or four special sessions. And if you look at what's getting passed, it's all the stuff they could never pass in the past decade, because there's, you know, people are voting from the comfort of their own home, and there's nobody you got to look in the eye when you're done voting. So I'm a little bit concerned about that we're going to get some stuff rammed down our throats that, you know, that if we were all there together may not happen. It seems like that's sort of the plan. But I think that we've all been talking by email and, you know, other ways of communicating about issues that we want to see move forward. And if not in this session, you know, just like the education that our kids aren't receiving right now, same thing holds true with the legislature. There are going to be some things that maybe don't get done. And so we'll just see. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, because I can see good and bad in both, but I'm just worried that without the accountability of having to look somebody in the eye when you take a vote, or, you know, that you're going to get policy that's not fully baked or that's lopsided.
Okay. Senator Dinger, what's your take on these session restrictions and challenges?
You know, it is an unusual time for everybody. And we in Olympia, actually, just before we adjourned, were able to pass a big COVID bill. I think that has really helped us all this year in making sure we had access to the dollars that we had passed just before we adjourned. We have asked everyone in our state to change the manner in which they do business. And everyone has risen to the occasion. And frankly, it is now our turn. So we must do our part in doing the best we can, given the circumstances we have. We have had practice during the interim. We've had committee hearings. We've done interim work. And people are getting used to the new normal. But the biggest things that I worry about the most, that we have to make sure we account for, is making sure that there is access to the public and that there's transparency. And we have actually seen that all year. I have never seen people as engaged as they have been this year. And frankly, I think it's because we don't have new Hollywood movies coming out. We don't have new TV shows coming in. So people are focused on what's going on in government. I will tell you that the committee hearings that I have run this interim, we've had experts from all over the country come to testify because they can on a Zoom platform. I've had people testify that have never ever done so before because getting to Olympia was a challenge. So in one aspect, we have made our democracy more open, more available to people that it wasn't traditionally open to. Now, it also does mean that we are going to have to slow down the manner in which we do our work. As Senator Rivers said, having committee chairs manage the number of sign-ins is going to be challenging. And this again goes to the access point, right? People feel more comfortable testifying now because they can do it from their living room. So I think you're going to get a lot more perspectives. I think it is going to lead to better outcomes because more people will be involved. While we may not be able to see people in the eye, they will be watching us on Zoom. They'll be watching us on TVW and they will be engaged. We also have a process for people to turn in written testimonies. So I will say I'm more optimistic here that the end product of bills, I think, will be much better because there will be more eyes on it. There'll be more voices involved. We do have to prioritize our session because frankly, it is going to be slower to do work. And so public health has to be number one. We have to have an economic recovery plan and we have to take a look at police accountability, crucial services and the budget. So the people's business will be done. And I am actually very hopeful that it will be done in a manner which is more transparent than it has ever been before.
Okay, and just so everyone knows, the Capitol campus is gonna be closed to the public and limited, obviously, for legislators and their staffs. So that was my next question to Senator Dingler. We'll start with you here. So how are you handling these restrictions when it comes to your staff and your office operations?
You know, so this is really interesting because as you all know, I got elected in 2017. And so when I came in, I'm like, why do people have so much paper? And so I was the first office in the Senate that went paperless. In 20 the advantage year because I had a Zoom license when people were like, what is Zoom? But I can tell you it can be done. And so people are adjusting, people are learning. I think it is challenging for many people in all honesty, because if you're not used to it, it is a new way of learning how to do business. And again, you know, our children are learning that, our other adults are learning that because we literally have been forced to accelerate our use of technology by at least 5 years.
Yeah.
So, but we know it can be done and that's why it's gonna slow things down. But my LA has been working remotely and we have meetings on a regular basis. We use both Teams and Zoom. I've had more constituent meetings and more meetings with lobbyists and other organizations than ever before because they find it easier to have access to me. I agree that it is challenging when you don't meet people face to face. There are many times I'll be walking down the hall and I'll see Senator Rivers and we'll check in on a bill or say something and those opportunities are gone. And I think we just have to be deliberate about making sure we are reaching out and coordinating that. So I think those are some of the challenges, but I am actually optimistic that we can work through those.
Yeah, Senator Rivers, how are you handling this? I mean, you have staff working from home, from the office, or are staff going to be, I suppose the question too, just to clarify, are staff allowed to be in the legislative offices on the Capitol?
The Secretary of the Senate has set out a guideline. Each office was to propose a work plan for their office.
Okay.
And so I have a session aide and I have my legislative assistant. My legislative assistant will be in Olympia 4 days a week and working from home one. My session aide will never be in Olympia. I also have an intern and she will be working from home. It's just going to be interesting to see, but I will say, you know, one of the learnings from COVID is that we can have people be highly productive from home.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is it's given them an opportunity to figure out which work environment is best for them. But I know for my part, you know, what Senator Dingra said is true. I can sit at my desk and go meeting after meeting after meeting where I'm not driving someplace. But you know, it's sort of this great big adventure, and
yeah,
whatever it is, we're resilient enough and we're smart enough to make it work. But a lot of it has been defined for us by the Secretary of the Senate.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, well, we've kicked things off here. Now we're going to be taking a break. We're going to jump into some of the policies here coming up in 2020. We'll be right back with Senator Rivers and Senator Dingra. You're listening to Filibusters.
KXRW would like to thank Nieuw Amsterdam for their ongoing support of community radio. Nieuw Amsterdam is Vancouver's premier cannabis market. Visit newvamsterdam.com to view and order from their full online menu. And they offer in-store, curbside, and touchless pickup to better serve you. Nieuw Amsterdam is located in the Height Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information at newvamsterdam.com.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at ADCO1.com. That's ADCO, the number 1.com.
All right, welcome back to Filibusters. Mike and John here with our guest, Senator Ann Rivers from the 18th Legislative District, and Senator Monica Dingra from the 45th, the fighting, or fabulous 45th now, 45th, up in Kent County. So anyways, King County, God, I said Kent County. Why did I say Kent?
Maybe you were thinking of Superman.
We'll go with it. But anyways...
Kent does have a lot of Indian Americans, so I don't know if that's the connection there.
I don't know. So anyways, we're going to go back and start talking about the 2020 session here a little bit. A lot of topics to cover, so try to do our best to get through some of these. So first topic I wanted to cover, and we'll go with to Senator Rivers here first, talking about the impact of small businesses. I know that's been a huge, huge issue here. You'd mentioned the service industry earlier, struggling to stay in business. And we all know the stories. We know people here in our community with restaurants. We know hotels are struggling. Obviously family-owned shops are struggling. What additional relief can we expect to see this session to help businesses?
Well, I can tell you that it's my hope that some of the relief includes stuff with the ESD. There's a projected 500 to 800% increase in the unemployment contribution, unemployment insurance contribution from employers. And that's because the experience rating goes up because they have so many unemployed people because of policies that have been instituted. So what that means is the paycheck burden per employee is going to grow so significantly that small businesses won't be able to afford to even cover their margins. So another thing that's happening really important to me that we have to deal with, you'll hear people talk about how they're now getting a bill from ESD to reimburse the unemployment that they received. And they're, you know, some of these are people on fixed incomes going, why, you know, I don't understand what happened here. So I think that we have to unravel all the fraud. I think we have to provide relief in the form of using the rainy day fund, since the rest of the budget is so stable now, using the rainy day fund to cover the overage to refill the unemployment trust account. The other thing that, and it's not a ton of money, but I think it all adds up. There are two other things. First of all, the governor did several proclamations that were helpful to business. So I think that we really need to have a hard look at those proclamations and say, what of all this stuff can we make permanent, so that provide some relief, regulatory relief for small businesses. Yeah. And then for restaurants in particular, the beer and the alcohol license fees that they have to pay. Some owners say, oh, that's pennies, it won't make a difference. But I think it all adds up. And I think when you add up, you know, restructuring of regulations based on what worked out for the proclamations, when mm-hmm. you take away the additional burden of the refilling the unemployment trust fund, when mm-hmm. forgive some of the fees and license costs, I think it all adds up. And it also, more importantly, sends a message to our businesses that they're important. We want them to succeed. The fact of the matter is, and you know this because of our experience in Battleground, most of these businesses are employing young single mothers, and they work there because they need the flexibility. So the pain is falling disproportionately. And to have some of these young single mothers reach out to me and say, where am I going to get $15,000 to pay back this unemployment? How am I going to do that? How am I going to take care of I don't make that much money. You really have to wonder what's happening here. So it's just it's a multifaceted approach that we need to take.
Awesome. Okay. Senator Dinger, what's your take on what relief we can expect from the legislature this session?
Thank you for that. You know, this is something that someone who testified in front of the Law and Justice Committee actually said, and I've really taken it to heart. And she said that the year 2020 has actually given us perfect vision. It has clearly shown us the inequities that exist in our society. And you can take a look anywhere from the issues that you mentioned, you can look at housing, education, broadband, access to healthcare, technology, the whole gamut. And so it is really up to us now that we can clearly see these inequities, how we're going to respond to them. And so, you know, you have to focus on that. And the focus definitely has been on that as well. You have to help people and you have to help small businesses. This is where I think it is really imperative for the federal government to step in. And they did over the summer. And I was very glad for the PPP program that has helped so many of our small businesses. I was very glad that the governor released $135 million from the CARES Fund for small business relief. And actually, for all your listeners out there, those applications are still open today. So please go ahead and make sure you apply for the $135 million from the federal CARES funds that are now available for small businesses. And so we have seen how those have actually really helped, and we have to make sure we continue to do so. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that this is where also taking a look at what data around the racial impact is also very important. On the east side over the summer, I was actually having meetings with minority-owned small businesses every 2 weeks with Representative Vandana Slaughter, because when the first amount of money came out, what we found is it wasn't actually going to small businesses, and it definitely wasn't going to the minority-owned small businesses. And so we had actually worked with the governor's office to make sure we don't have a first come, first served mentality, because otherwise it's the people in the know, the people who have the connections, who get access to the resources, but really opening it up so that everyone has equal access to get the resources they need to survive. And so I think it's imperative that we continue to learn from best practices, make sure that the money gets to the people that it needs to get to in the best way possible, so that we're getting rid of some of these bureaucratic loopholes that people need to jump through. And so I think that's going to be a focus, is in really making sure how can we continue supporting individuals, supporting families, and supporting small businesses. And a huge component of that is access to childcare. All the single mothers that are out there trying to work, and when you have kids at home and no place to put them, that's a huge barrier. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where people who normally didn't think about childcare are all coming up and saying, you know what, this has to be a priority. Access to childcare for everyone is imperative for our businesses to work and for individuals to get back to work.
So, and I know the other side of it too, right, is folks having this insecurity in their employment right now. I think, and it crosses, and it really obviously affects the service industry, but dominoes out into a bunch of different industries as well. And then along with that comes, you know, with your job comes housing stability and being able to afford to stay where you're at. And so that we already had issues prior to the pandemic with that here in Washington State. So 1 in 3 renters have little or no confidence that they're going to be able to make their next rent payment. So, you know, will we see the Senate supporting further eviction, mediation, rental assistance programs that are going to help people stay in their homes, Senator Dinger?
Thank you for that. That's actually a huge issue, right? And in the pandemic, what do we need? We need the basics. We need housing, yeah. We need food, we need health. That's what we need as human beings. And so the moratorium that the governor had done on evictions is really crucial because this is the wrong time to have people being homeless. So Senator Cooter chairs our housing committee in the Senate. And I know this is something that she has been working very closely with both tenants and landlords and really making sure we can come up with a solution that works for everybody. Another component of this is working with our judicial system, because if you are going to need, if they're going to bring lawsuits, our judicial system right now is backlogged to an extent it never has been. I mean, their focus is definitely criminal cases, which it needs to be. On top of that, they have civil matters. They have so many other issues that impact people. And you know, we're not even talking about domestic violence and no contact orders and protection orders, which we've seen this pandemic with the high increase in domestic violence cases. Yeah. So there's a lot on our judicial system right now as well. So I think absolutely taking a look at arbitration, mediation as a mechanism for dispute resolution is going to be key. So this is work that has been going on all interim, and I'm very hopeful that we will have a solution or some kind of plan to propose for next session.
So Senator Rivers, how are we going to keep people in their homes?
So I don't know if you're aware, but the governor did a huge disbursement of CARES Act funding to help pay for rental assistance. But the problem was he only gave it to publicly owned facilities. So what we have now is a bow wave problem that's only going to get worse. And here it is. That landlords are selling their one-off residences that were rentals, and they are now exiting the rental market. So we're creating a crisis. We, you know, when you can't afford to, you can't afford to just let people live free for 10 months and still think that you're going to be able to pay your property tax, that you're going to be able to, you know, pay everything associated with it. So it's just a mess of a situation because most people don't understand what moratorium means. They think, oh, now I don't have to pay my rent, it's all good. What they don't recognize is that they are at some point going to be responsible for that rent. But the, you know, do the math. If you paid $900 a month, you're looking at $9,000 that you're gonna have to come up with somewhere. So I would like to see the governor release CARES Act funding to the private rental property owners and do some type of property tax forgiveness for the ones who had, you know, say 50% of their people haven't paid their rent since say April, beginning of April or beginning of May or something, because you have to have a sort of a full portfolio of types of rental. It can't all just be public. You've got to have, there are many elderly people who have their rental properties as their retirement program. Sure. And so you've got to look, it has to be a strong foundation. So taking some of that CARES Act money and actually supporting the private rental owners so that they can still keep people in their facility or their homes, I think would be a really good step. But these are I'll just tell you, and it's, I'm not putting a knock on the governor. I think at first he did the very best he could, but I feel like we should have been called back into session a long time ago because he doesn't even seem to acknowledge that there's a problem in the private rental market. And no one's, you know, we've written letters, but I think we've written 32 letters saying, did you know about this? And I think we've gotten two responses back. So I think that we all do, our state really benefits when we're all working together. And and that hasn't happened. So I'm hopeful that by working across the aisle in the Senate and across the rotunda, we'll be able to fix some of these things that right now are creating such a bow wave. I don't know how anyone really returns.
It's really good points. I know several private owners of rentals that, you know, they have to pay the bills as well on their end. And that's always, because if they don't have rental properties available, those folks are likely going to have nowhere to rent from at some point. So pretty challenging.
Exactly.
So I know we're up against it. We got about a minute here before our next break, but I did want to start a new topic here before we moved on to our break. And that is police reform. You know, a topic that's been out there, but definitely amplified this last year. And for a lot of reasons, nationally and even locally. So, you know, Senator Rivers, I did want to ask this question, and we may have to take a break quickly here, but do you support a broad, more restrictive statewide use of force standard?
We actually passed, as a people, 940. But then the legislature never funded it, which was kind of like, oh yeah, we want this, but we're not going to pay for it. So I would like to see that fully implemented. I think chokeholds are not appropriate in every situation. So I think I'm not comfortable allowing those to continue. I think that there are things when we're all sitting at the table that we can say we need to be doing this differently, that differently, and really looking at the community policing, moving away from a militaristic style, moving towards a community policing style, just using these opportunities to really reevaluate what we're doing and talk about you know, the value of the rule of law.
Okay, great, great. Well, Senator Dinger, we'll have to take a break here and come back and get your answer. So we're here with Senator Rivers and Senator Monica Dinger, and you are listening to Filibusters. We'll be back in just a second.
Court-appointed special advocates for children, known as CASA, are volunteers who advocate for the best interest of children who have come into the care of the state as a result of abuse, neglect, or abandonment. You can lend your voice and volunteer with CASA to change a child's story. CASA offers virtual information sessions and training. If interested, now is the time to get involved with CASA and make a lasting difference in the lives of children and families in the foster care system. Clark County CASA is a program of the YWCA Clark County. More information available at CASAClarkCounty.org.
Big thank you to our friends at Boomerang Therapy Works and home of the KXRW Studios. Boomerang is the only physical therapy facility in Vancouver and Portland that specializes in the treatment of neuromuscular disorders and brain injuries like Parkinson's, MS, and stroke. They opened Boomerang to bring premier treatment to their patients. Find Boomerang Therapy Works in action on Instagram or Facebook and see how their patients are inspired in their recovery. They can be reached at 360-258-1637. That's 360-258-1637. 1637.
All right, welcome back to Filibusters. Mike and John here with Senator Ann Rivers and Senator Monica Dinger as we continue our conversation about the 2020 legislative session in Olympia, beginning here in January. So wanted to give Senator Dinger a chance to answer this question. So Senator, do you support a more broad, more restrictive statewide use of force standard for police officers?
So, you know, I'm going to, I've been I think all of you listeners know this, I've been a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County, and I've been a prosecutor for about 18 years before I decided to run for office. You know, yours is very specific about use of force. And I think when we talk about police accountability, I really want to take a look at the larger concept of police accountability, deadly force being one component of it. And one of the other things that I used to do in my role as a senior deputy prosecuting attorney is I actually helped create the 40-hour crisis intervention training for law enforcement at the Criminal Justice Training Commission, and was an instructor there until I decided to stop running for, until I decided to run for office. And so to me, you know, it is a much wider topic. And it starts off by, you know, similar to what Senator Rivers said. What we want in our law enforcement officers is we want guardians of our community. not warriors patrolling our streets. And that is a culture shift that had started about 10 years ago, but we really have to make sure that that does permeate all aspects of our law enforcement officers. There is a great deal of responsibility and respect that we place in the hands of our law enforcement officers. We give them the authority to carry a gun to enforce the laws of the state. And, you know, in our criminal justice system, prosecutors are held to a higher ethical standard than other lawyers. And I think the same needs to be true of our law enforcement officers. I have worked with law enforcement officers my entire career, and there's some that are incredible and great, and they hold themselves up to that high standard. And I think we need to make sure we have procedures and laws that enable those officers to be at that full potential and enable others to also hold themselves up to that high standard. So all this summer, many of us have been working with law enforcement, with community leaders, with different stakeholders, and really taking a look at all aspects of our police accountability, including the use of deadly force. And I think what you're going to see come next session is a slew of bills that goes everywhere from a decertification process. I have a bill on a duty to intervene and a duty to report, including taking a look at a potential impeachment disclosure. I have a bill on an audit system that, you know, we have these great procedures in place. Let's make sure we also have a system to do an audit, so we know that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And if they're not, we have the ability to change that. So really not things that are not, not an intent to politicize matters, but you really talk about how do we have accountability, transparency, and make sure we're giving people the tools that they need in order to do their job. One other thing I will mention really quickly, and this goes into my other passion, which is behavioral health, is our federal government has authorized the 988 system, which is gives us the opportunity to actually create a statewide behavioral health crisis system. And so you can really take those behavioral health calls away from law enforcement responding to them and have a modality of response that makes sense. We cannot ask our law enforcement officers to do everything, and they're not behavioral health experts. And so removing that from their work, which they've been asking for years, I think will actually go a long way in making sure that we have fewer use of deadly force incidents.
So, Senators, one of the questions that I have, and I really want to try and avoid the national stage simply because there's just so much going on there, and it's not pertinent to what we need to have and get done here in locally. However, in Spokane County, the Spokane County Democrats had a gentleman come into their facility, threaten them with a bomb, and then set fire to the place. And he chose that because of the fact that it was the closest political party place that he could find, and that his alleged manifesto that he has was really against both Democrats and Republicans. And the concern that I have, and what I'd like to ask you folks is that because of my concern is, of course, our local party politics, is what are we looking to do from a party perspective to have more bipartisanship happen between both organizations? Because there is this element out in the community now that is just thoroughly fed up with party politics. Senator Rivers, maybe I'll start with you.
So it's so funny that you should ask this, because I was just visiting the other day with who I'm hoping will be the next chair of the Democrat Party in Clark County. And we are, of course, the Republicans are going through a party shift as well. And so a leadership shift. And so I was just brainstorming some ideas, because John, I remember when we had softball games and we would do things, but I think it's time for us to lock arms and do something that would be good for the community as a whole. So I was thinking out loud about maybe we do a food drive and we make it competitive to see who can, you know, bring the most food into the food bank so that everyone wins. But it's also this idea of just allowing people to see that we're all just people. We're all in this together. Truly, we're all in this together. And It's hard to feel hatred towards someone when you know their backstory, when you understand what they do for a living, when you understand the kind of pressures that they're under. And I really feel like, you know, social media and this separation because of COVID has really created this keyboard warrior mentality that I can say anything from behind the safety of my keyboard, that things that I would never in a million years say to someone's face. And I think that we have to get beyond that. And so we've got to really focus on doing some things together to, oh, you know, I don't agree with it. And Monica Stonier and I say this all the time, very different political DNA, but that's okay. Because I have tremendous respect for her. And I think she respects me too. I feel like she does. And so it's the idea of taking it back to the human element. We're all humans regardless. I mean, look at, you need a brain tumor removed. Are you gonna, the first question you ask your surgeon is, hey, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Because if you are, fill in the blank, there's no way you're touching my brain. I mean, that never even comes up. It's just so ridiculous. So I think that there are some things we can do. I think we need to reinstitute, you know, the sort of the competitive softball games and maybe do a opposites attract dinner where we have to sit with someone from the other party and just visit and get to know them.
Thank you, Senator. And Senator Dingra, what are your thoughts on that?
Thank you for that. It was actually very unfortunate what happened in Spokane, and incidents like that really have such a detrimental impact on a democracy. I do want to say, you know, words are very powerful. And to me, this is a result of what has been happening at the national level, not the state level, the national level. And my hope really is that come January, that temperature is going to go down because we're not going to have that hateful rhetoric that divides people anymore, that there's going to be a new national conversation, and that's one about unity, working together. And to me, that is the Washington story. 90% of our bills are bipartisan. You know, even this entire time, the COVID relief package, bipartisan. When we do the governor's proclamations, it's the four corners that sign a letter to agree to extend it because you need both Democrats and Republicans in order to extend those governor's proclamations. We have been doing that. We had a joint special committee on COVID recovery. So I do want to say that this is not the Washington story. This is the national story. And we have to own the Washington narrative. And I actually have a great story about Ann Rivers and bipartisan support. She and I had sponsored this bill that actually blew up my social media last session. And it was a bill to provide free menstrual products for our girls in school. It was a bill that was brought to me by high school students and they were very passionate about it. She was a co-sponsor. We did have an amendment that one of her colleagues had put on saying that only 50% of the bathrooms need to do it and not 100%. And she was not gonna have it. That bill was not gonna pass. And she walked in to her caucus and she sat down and spoke to all the men in there and she came out and she goes, we're good to go.
Nice.
From the Senate floor. And, you know, that is the Washington story. We get along. We listen to each other. We have each other provide feedback on our bills. And I think this is what we have to elevate. And that is what we have to talk about. Because here's the bottom line. If you want true solutions to problems, you have to have everyone around the table. Because otherwise, you're not going to get to that true solution. So I really do hope that people start talking about the Washington story, start talking about people as human beings. And I think this is where I urge every leader to take personal responsibility and check their rhetoric because words are powerful and we have to change the narrative.
You know, I think part of it too here is we tend to hear, the loudest voices tend to be the folks that want to make their voices loud to stir the pot, if you will, to create some controversy. And so whenever folks do work together on things, we just don't hear about it as much because that's not a juicy story. You know, the juicy story is the tweet or the Facebook post or the opinion letter in the paper. I know we're coming up against a break here, but I did want to ask one quick question regarding the governor. I know Senator Rivers brought this up earlier, so I'll go back to her on this to start. You know, there's discussion about, you know, not having special sessions and so along the lines of regarding public health and the governor's authority that he has as of right now, is there discussion about limiting that going forward?
So there is a bipartisan discussion, and it's not to put a knock on the governor. It's the part of the legislature is we control the power of the purse. So the $3.5 billion that came from the feds, you know, I just was in a Ways and Means meeting last week where both Senator Braun, the Republican, and Senator Rolfes, the Democrat, said that they were sometimes consulted, but the consultation, they weren't really sure that the consultation meant anything to the governor. So I think that there's just a strong feeling that the legislature is most in touch with the people. And so we know what the needs are and can help to best direct the spending of the money, the CARES Act money. And so I think that that's one thing that we are looking at, working in a bipartisan way to, and again, this isn't about the governor, it's just sort of learning from some of the lessons because he did do a lot of things right. So we've been having those discussions in our caucus, but I'm not sure what Senator Dingra is doing, what they're doing in her caucus.
Yeah, Senator, have you heard any talk about this issue around the governor's authority?
So, you know, it's been really interesting. We've had a pandemic and it's been, people say unprecedented times. It is truly unprecedented times. And so learning how to navigate this has been very interesting. And so I will say what the rules we currently have on a emergency, and I think the governor did that, declaring the emergency. I think there is, I think I talked a little bit about the proclamation process. I think many people don't know that he doesn't have unlimited authority there. Those proclamations can only be extended by agreement by the Republicans and the Democrats in the House and the Senate. And so that's a process that happens every month to make sure that those proclamations are extended. And, you know, just Senator Rivers' points about the consultation, I think that's something that we were figuring out. You know, how is that consultation going to happen? What is the method of providing feedback? And I will say that the processes have improved. So I think it's a work in progress. And it'll continue to be a work in progress. I think absolutely after the emergency ends, we will have to go back and really make sure, you know, are there better ways in which we could have improved the system? What else do we need to do? But I want all your viewers to know that this has not been, you know, one man out there doing his own thing. There has been consultation. There has been the ability to provide input and absolutely this, you know, the signing off on all the proclamations from all four corners in order for those to continue.
Okay. Well, you know, we had promised you three segments, but we have to bring you guys back here for just after this break for trivia. We have to. We promised we would do it, and we've covered so much here, and we could talk probably for hours. But we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Senator Rivers and Senator Monica Dingra on Filibusters. We'll be right back in just a moment. All right, we're back with more Filibusters. Mike and John here with Senator Ann Rivers and Senator Monica Dingra, and we are back for trivia.
Dun, dun, dun.
We need like clapping or something. Yay. John, so the way this is going to work is John is going to take the helm here, and I'm going to compete with both of the senators. And no, I'm not going to just let them win. This is going to be a competition. I'm competitive. And so, John, take it away. Guide us through trivia here, my man.
All right. So first of all, we're going to have to do some housekeeping here. And Mike, what is your animal sound going to be since people can't see you raising your hand?
It's a tiger and it's going to be roar.
Okay. And Senator Dingra, what's your animal?
Mine's going to be woof woof for my dog, Sheru Gryffindor Singh.
Oh, all right. Love it. And Senator Rivers.
I'm going to be a cat, even though I'm allergic to cats, and I'm going to sound like this. Meow.
Nice. Nice. So actually, all right.
Can I change the rules on you guys? Since we've had all this conversation about bipartisan support, I see Senator Rivers and I actually compete against Mike. So it's the senators versus the non-elected.
Ooh.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
A bipartisan step.
All right. Let's do it. All right.
So bipartisan against Mike. You better.
Even more pressure now. I like it.
You were representing filibusters here, my boy. So.
Oh boy. All right.
Come on in. We can do this.
Here we go.
First question. Technology question. What year was the very first model of the iPhone released?
Do we get the top two choices?
You got to choose a year. Come on. All right. Okay, we can't waste radio time.
Roar.
Okay. I don't know what kind of tiger that was, but that was.
It's not a good tiger. Right. I'm gonna go with 2005.
That's incorrect.
Yeah.
Senator Dinger.
I was gonna go with 2000.
That's incorrect. Senator Rivers, you gotta throw out a number. You're out of here.
I'm gonna say 2007.
You are correct. One for the bipartisan senatorship here.
All right, this is Mike, two out of three, right, John?
It's two out of three. So you.
Oh boy,
you're killing me here.
All right, I gotta get these two. All right, come on.
All right, here we go. What country produces the most coffee in the world? Oh, we got dead air time going here. Senator Dinger.
I'll just go with Brazil.
Brazil is correct.
Oh my goodness.
All right.
Oh well, that was competitive.
Bipartisanship always wins.
Again, thank you, senators, for all the work you do, and good luck in this interesting session. It's going to be interesting.
And thank you so much. It's always good to be here.
Thank you. I agree. It's really been great. And I love the conversation, especially the trivia.
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to say thank you both. And I really appreciate it.
Exactly.
Bye.
Awesome. All right. Bye-bye.
So I just want to thank Senator Monica Dinger and Senator Ann Rivers for joining us. As we can see, this is a small example of bipartisanship that they can come onto our show and talk about these subjects that are near and dear to a lot of folks, whether it be the housing, whether it be the policing, all these different things. And so I'm pretty excited about the fact that 2021 may be the year that things turn around. Obviously, Senator Dinger and Senator Rivers both said that the story of Washington is not the same story that's being held at the national level, but there are a lot of people that are still being affected, whether it be by social media or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's great. I know they've been on the show multiple times each, and it's always good to have them back, especially in their leadership positions. And, you know, like I said, we literally could have talked for hours about everything going on, but wanted to highlight a few of the big topics and especially the economic issues and then police reform. I know that's going to be a big issue as well. It's going to be a different atmosphere. You know, usually I do make it up to Olympia once or twice every legislative session. It's packed with people all the time, and those folks, the senators and legislators, they're sitting in their office, and every 15 minutes there's another group of people coming in, and that's all changing. So it's interesting to hear that they've already been obviously changing their way they operate since last spring, and right. It sounds like they're actually even more efficient now because they can just sit at one spot, do the meetings in a virtual way, and move on to the next meeting, and there's less logistics involved. That's encouraging, and also encouraging that there's going to be more opportunity for folks who can't make the trip to Olympia. That's always been a barrier for folks, right, to testify on legislation. Yep. Now there will be virtual opportunities, and I would assume once we do get back to normal, hopefully by next session after this, that'll continue to be something that's accessible to folks that can't. This is a big state. I mean, right. Olympia is 2 hours away from us. If you live over in Walla Walla or Spokane, I mean, that's a long drive to get to Olympia. And it costs money, you know, it costs money. You got to get a hotel, you got to drive. So this is an opportunity maybe for us to rethink, reimagine how we interact with the public from the legislature, which is a really, you know, kind of one of the positives that come out of all this.
Oh, no, I agree. And I think even from a radio perspective here, the fact that it's been hard to get some of the state executive level offices to come onto the show, I think it might be a little bit easier for them to do it now that we are using Zoom and these other technologies to be able to record from our homes or from our offices and such.
And there's no shortage of big issues to tackle. Man, right now people are hurting. Vaccines are just starting to come out. So I think it's really important for us to understand where legislature is and how they're going to help people stay in their homes and how they're going to help businesses. And so I'm encouraged that there's bipartisanship happening there. And even when it comes to the governor, the governor's been, critiqued quite a bit, just like most governors have who've imposed restrictions. And to hear that this whole experience is presenting some opportunities to do things a little differently, not just because of any one particular thing Governor Inslee has done, but just the fact that we've never experienced something like this before. So it's good to hear that both parties are talking about, well, how can we maybe do this better going forward? God forbid another pandemic hits us or a huge right. emergency situation where the governor has to enact these kind of powers again.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we recognize that, everybody has been having to deal with this in many different ways and everything. But, one of the things that we have to work on is working together, whether it be Democrat versus Republican, whether it be labor versus environmental or whatever. There's just so many different things that are out there that we need to start working together, because, fighting against each other is just not working.
It's not. But, as we start to wrap up here, the end of the year is near. John, we still have one more show to go here before the end of the year, right? Maybe.
Yep.
I don't have the calendar in front of me. I don't know, man. I'm relying on you. You're the producer. So, we'll come back and wrap things up a little bit for 2020 and put a big old ribbon and bow, whatever, on it. But we're getting into the holidays. We're in the midst of Hanukkah right now. Christmas is around the corner. New Year's is coming up. Seems like people are in a little better moods these days. I mean, people are still frustrated and upset with what's going on out there, but, with all the negative things that do happen, that we have a lot of positive things out there. So, folks, again, we want to thank you for your continued patronage, if you will, to this show and to the station KXRW. Local independent radio is really important, especially in these times when we have to get information out and make sure that folks understand what's going on out there. So we really appreciate it. So for John, this is Mike. Thank you for listening to Filibusters. Be safe, be well, wear a mask. Take care, everyone.